Hello, and welcome to Cornwall Woman. I'm standing in front of my crackling log fire at the moment because it's a bit of a wild one out there today. But we are going outside. In fact, we're off to the beach to meet Rachel Lambert, who's an expert in foraging. And today, it's all about seaweed. But for Rachel, foraging is about more than just free food.
I know the more I slow down, the more present I am, so actually time gets larger. Rather than if I'm rushing, I feel like I've just lost loads of time because I'm not present in it. And foraging allows me, I think, to slow down and really appreciate what I have.
So I'm off to meet this wise woman and join the other fledgling foragers and Rachel's dog, Paddy. It's an absolutely beautiful autumn day. In fact, you can tell it's autumn, listen. I'm just tramping through these leaves outside a church at a place called Mornan, which is near Falmouth. And we're going to forage seaweed on the beach, which is not far away from here. The sky's blue, little fluffy white clouds. You can hear the wind blowing through the autumn trees. And now we're going to head off down to the beach. So Rachel, where are we going?
Oh, we're going down to a lovely cove. We're going down to Mornan here. It's a relatively new beach for me, which is always exciting because it means there's always more to explore.
And I can just see the sea now through the trees.
Can you?
Yeah, glittering.
Oh, well
there
done.
In the distance. So how did you become a forager?
Well, I think like many good things, it came just from a personal interest, and I was teaching myself, and I had found myself over the years in different situations where I'd been learning from people with a lot of knowledge, some of them friends, some of them acquaintances, and it just really grew from there. I've always taught in some shape or form. Previously about nutrition, around kind of environmental education with children. So for me to be able to pass on knowledge, I kind of teach foraging felt like far more rewarding than just doing it myself.
You decided upon this career change, didn't you, and having to sort of change direction and falling out of a tree was part of this process.
I did fall out of a tree and it took me several years to recover really with broken bones and trauma, and I think that was the start of thinking of things breaking down for me in London. But there was already a desire to leave, and I knew I wouldn't stay there forever, and the two happened to coincide.
How many different things can you confidently identify and use as foodstuffs now that are all around us for free?
I'd imagine over 100, and some of those I feel like I know very well, like old friends, I feel very familiar with them, and others I haven't experimented with much, or maybe have just tasted on the hoof and as I've walked rather than taking them home and cooked them. So various different degrees of knowledge depending on what the food is. So the Japanese name for lava is nori. As well, so that's the other thing, which it just gets really interesting, of just also how we work with the seaweed completely differently across, you know, across the world and in different continents. So lava bread is actually has no bread in it at all. It is a pulp made from the seaweed, where it's boiled for sometimes as much as 12 hours, reduced down. So all the water is absorbed, which is harder, easier said than done. And you've got a kind of puree. It's broken down naturally in a puree, rich in iron and B vitamins. It is extraordinary stuff. This isn't great raw. You're welcome to try it, but you'll find it's chewy. There's a way around it. One is one of the traditions that I found from Taiwan, I think, where it's dried and then it's just taken over a flame a few times to just sort of help crisp it up, and then broken off and dropped into pieces into a soup and just cooked for about 10 minutes, the end of the soup. Also, if you dry it, or even semi-dry, I mean, this is feeling quite dry, you could just heat up oil, nice and hot, drop drop in these for 10 seconds to bring it out, and you've got lovely black crisps. So there's a few different choices. I've used this in bread before, where we've made a lava bread loaf and then laid it within a bread dough and then rolled it up, so you kind of get like a swirled bread. It's quite nice.
So what brought you to Cornwall? How long have you lived here?
I've been here coming up to 12 years, and I think, simply put, I think I wanted to live by the sea, and I definitely wanted to be in the southwest. And I looked at moving back to Devon, it wasn't fitting, and just Cornwall felt the next natural step, really.
You'd lived in cities, London and other places?
Yeah, so I was born in Birmingham, brought up in Bristol, so in a way cities are normal for me, and in a way they feel very abnormal. I like small places and small towns. I thought if I have the courage, I would go over that Tamar and into a land that isn't so familiar to me, but maybe has lots of riches. And I haven't looked back. I just want you to cast your eyes that way, and can you see there is something a bit golden that's popped
up? The ears.
Golden ears, yes. That's popped up amongst the rocks.
Yeah.
So that's going to be our next seaweed, our next plant.
Ooh, really?
And then from that, I think it might be good to have something to eat and drink.
What is it about foraging that you like? What do you get from it personally?
You know, I think it's a really simple question, and I still struggle to answer it, because it feels like such a sensory, hands-on experience, and being able to translate that into words doesn't feel like it does justice, but I'll give it a go. So, well, we've spoken before about that whole thing of just taking time out, and for me, taking time in nature helps kind of recalibrate my system, really, and help bring me back down to earth, more into my senses, out of my head. I love to be able to taste things and experience the world, so foraging gives me that avenue into that world. The fantastic flavours, and just being able to be in the moment and feel alive by picking and eating something that is literally alive, that's just freshly picked. And then other stuff which maybe is a little bit more general, just obviously I love being outside, I like walking, I like good food that tastes good and satisfying and fresh.
I'm really inspired by your approach to time, and it's sort of an ongoing ambition of mine to make better use of my time, which is the opposite of making more efficient use of it, perhaps. This is a bit of something you keep working on yourself, isn't it?
Yes, efficient use of time. It's an interesting concept,
yeah,
isn't it?
Getting things ticked off the list and being productive, but that means something else to you, doesn't it?
Yes, I think sometimes I need to do the absolute opposite of what I think I need to do. So if I feel really stressed, it's good to step away from things, get outside, go for a walk. I know the more I slow down, the more present I am. So actually, time gets larger, rather than if I'm rushing, I feel like I've just lost loads of time because I'm not present in it. And in foraging allows me, I think, to slow down and really appreciate what I have.
Because I suppose when you go on your foraging trips with groups of people and on your own, to what extent can you guarantee that you're going to find what you're looking for?
I kind of know what I will find, mostly because I'm choosing the venues and I've seen them throughout the year for several years. Having said that, things do change, and sometimes plants are in between seasons. And I enjoy that, being in the moment and being able to change tack and go, oh, look, it's not here where I thought it would be, let's see what else is here, or something catching my eye that I hadn't noticed before. And that makes it feel very fresh and new for me, rather than coming in as like, oh yeah, I know everything and I'm an expert, which I'm not. It's still a learning journey for me, and I still have to look and learn. And sometimes I'm looking for something and someone goes, oh, is it that one? It's like, great, yes, this is what we're all doing, we're doing it together. Anyone know what this one is? I want to make a educated or a random guess.
Lolo Rosso.
The Lolo Rosso, I love it. you know, there's no harm in making your own names. I love this game. So this one is called Dulce.
Oh,
exactly.
D-U-L-C-E.
Yeah.
Dulce.
It's absolutely delicious.
Yes.
Nice.
I love the taste, mm-hmm. and I can't decide what it tastes like.
And that's the great thing. So let's just go umami. Yeah. Which is talked about as being the fifth flavour, isn't it? And also that it helps bring out other flavours. So that's one of the benefits of seaweeds. That you can add it into a dish and it helps bring out other flavours and sort of accentuate flavours that are already there. So you've got good protein, you've got a good things like magnesium, just a fantastic range of nutrients in Dulce. Naturally salty, it's got that lovely translucentness to it, hasn't it? It looks like sort of fingers, how it spreads out as well, the kind of the structure of it. In Canada, I've heard they have developed a little tradition of having dried Dulce in a brown bag on the dashboard of a car to help soften it a bit and then have it as a snack. There's expression in Scotland of chewing the Dulce and it would be dried and just you have it in your pocket just as a dried snack.
Yeah.
And I have a jar sometimes, which I haven't, not always, but sometimes I get out of the cupboard and have it beside my laptop, and that's my little snack as I work sometimes.
We live in Cornwall. Do you think we've, as Cornwall people, as Cornwall women, do you think we've lost over the generations a lot of knowledge about seaweed? Do you think people would have eaten seaweed more often?
I think we must have. I think it was a tradition, like many, that was broken, and it's about re-establishing that. The nearest place I know is North Devon, where they collect lava and still make lava bread. But I don't know anywhere in Cornwall or on the Isles of Scilly where that tradition has kept going.
Mm.
We have, of course, in shellfish and fishing, but not with seaweeds.
And the different flavours as well. Do you think our kind of palate has narrowed, really? Everything sort of in terms of food and because of supermarkets, perhaps, we've become a bit homogenised and narrowed.
Totally, and not just to do with supermarkets. It happened, you know, before all that, but we eat very few species of plants, and obviously we've been farming between 6,000 and 10,000 years in the UK, so that has meant that we have hybridised and changed plants that we've grown as well.
You also do foraging for land plants.
Mm.
You mentioned the wild carrot.
Mm.
How far away is a wild carrot to the bright orange scrubbed relation that we know today?
Well, related, but can seem quite far away. So it's still a taproot. So it's a long, thin vegetable, but it's longer and thinner. It's not orange. It's white. It's not sweet. It's more like a carrot oil. It's a more intense flavour. And also the fibre is on the outside rather than in the core. So there's actually quite a lot of differences. Superficially the flower looks the same, so the aerial parts and the leaf look similar, but mainly I teach it for the seed is maybe most similar to something like aniseed or caraway, just really a bit of a wow flavour, really.
Hi Paddy.
Hello Paddy dog. Irish moss actually is the description of a specific seaweed within this family. The other name is carrageen or carrageenan. So this is your setting agent. Okay, so this is for setting panna cottas, jellies, for thickening soups. And as cold comes in, I'll be putting a blog out to do with a cough syrup as well, which is made with this. So cough syrups are often thickened with like honey or sugar, and this is thickened with carrageen. And then you can add honey to it. So it's very, very lovely, goes down very smoothly. A good comforter for coughs and colds. We also were going down to kind of middle shore, so this tends to be middle to lower shore. That doesn't always hold true, but tends to be. And red seaweeds. The green seaweeds tend to be more kind of like upper to middle shore.
Could you just classify the shore levels?
So and, upper, and terms top of tide. Bit,
yes.
Top bit, middle shore in the middle. When it's a really nice low tide, you've got lower shore, farthest out that you can get to. So we've started on the upper.
But there's always tidal. It's always where the tide comes, shore.
Yeah, so that's that kind of, yeah, and then you've got the term subtidal, which will always be below that low tide mark.
Right.
And some seaweeds really don't like to come above that low tide mark at all. They want to be deep under and stay. We won't be looking at those today because we're not going out paddling that far. This one's quite interesting as well. And carrageen, well, the original sort of, so let's talk about Irish moss, is considered a complete food in terms of its balance of carbohydrates, proteins and fats. The Gigatata stellatata, the one that Andrew's got in his hands, the one with the bubbly ones, that I know, if, for example, vitamin C is highest in the summer. So there is a, there's a benefit to picking at different times of year as well.
Mm. You've written books as well. One of them won the equivalent of an Oscar. Is that right? I read that somewhere.
I think the Oscar of the cookbook world, something like that, I think it was described.
Let's
as.
Say the Oscar of the cookbook
yeah,
world.
Shall we?
Yeah.
So yeah, Gourmand Cookbook Awards, which are world awards. So I won in the category of fish for the UK, because there's not a seaweed category. Maybe there will be in the future. We'll see.
So this is for your book about seaweed.
Yeah,
foraging.
About the seaweed book. It's lovely to have that acknowledged, and also it feels like quite a prestigious award as well.
You do your foraging courses and you write your books.
Yeah.
But Rachel Lambert, sort of day to day, is foraging an intrinsic part of your life and your diet and your culinary experience? You said you said you've got loads of seaweed in your cupboard, so it must be.
I have a seaweed cupboard. I think it is, and I think one of the signs of that is not thinking about it. So it inevitably becomes part of my diet. Having said that, I go through phases. So phases where I might be using wild ingredients more than at other times. So these days it tends to be in small amounts, rather than going out and doing a whole feast that's just revolved around forage food. However, it depends who I'm with and what I find.
And what about, you know, a bag of chips with loads of salt on, or a bar of chocolate or something?
Yeah, great.
Phew.
Yeah, I mean, I just like food. I mean, sometimes chips are great. Right then, this is a broth. So it has a kelp. It's got two types of kelp, actually. And then something called sea spaghetti, which we haven't seen here today. So this is it's an organic, it's kind of like half white, half brown bread, a couple of rises, and it's got the sea lettuce in. But you've tasted the sea lettuce, haven't you, down on the beach there as well?
The sea lettuce fries.
Paddy, away! Away! That's naughty.
That's lovely bread. Smells good.
Good. So we did bladderwrack, we did lava, we did gutweed, and we did sea lettuce. We've done dulse, we've done carrageen, two different types of carrageen, and we've done kelp. But they are a whole world to get to know. But hopefully that's been a kind of helpful introduction and starting place. And I normally say we do eight, so if we go down now, we might well be able to see pepper dulse, which is a lovely one, which I'd love to show you. Mm-hmm. You feel like I can stretch you another 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. I think we have time for, don't we? Yeah.
So I've still got the taste of the pepper dulse seaweed in my mouth, which we just found a bit more of on this beach, which is, I can't really describe the taste, maybe slightly mushroomy, but not really, a little bit salty. So delicious. Apart from the fact that it tastes really nice, why should we be eating seaweed?
Seaweed does contain iodine, which is important for the diet to some degree. Nutritionally, seaweeds are really great. They've got an amazing range of different nutrients across them, depending on the seaweed and the season. And then seaweeds as a whole, between them all, have 56 different minerals and trace elements that are important for the human body, essential for the human body. So they have quite a lot going for them, and that's beside the fact of just seaweeds can be a medium that we get to know the world of the underworld world of seaweeds, get to appreciate them more, and then hopefully start to change our behaviours so we start to care more for that world as well.
Ah, that's a really interesting point, of course, because there's a lot of concern now about protecting the ocean and thinking about what we've done to it really as human species. And yeah, it is kind of the big blue other, really, isn't it?
The big blue other, yeah.
Yeah, getting to know seaweed is a way of getting to know the ecosystem of the ocean.
Yeah, yes, and we take so much for granted, and we've been very lucky in that respect, but things are changing, and it's very easy to stay removed from those things. I think the more we learn and understand and crouch down and taste and look at things, and I can fill in gaps of explaining, well, this seaweed is declining, this one might increase because of climate change, because of the seas warming. Kelps, for example, are really important for dissipating waves in terms of more storms that are coming there. And we spoke also about them being producers of oxygen, up to 8% of our oxygen. So
8% of the world's oxygen comes from seaweed?
Yeah, from marine algae.
Oh.
And seaweed is a marine algae.
So where are your favourite places in Cornwall? You obviously spend an awful lot of time outdoors.
Well, here we are, kind of outside of Falmouth, towards kind of different creeks and estuaries, and I'm quite in love with this area at the moment, I have to say. And I also love being in West Cornwall and along the sort of rugged coast there. And I quite like not having a favourite place as well, and that changing with the seasons and with moods. And God, aren't we lucky having choice?
Do you think you could do what you do anywhere else?
Yes, I do. But I don't want to. And actually, as the years have ticked by, I want to stay more in this area rather than go to Devon to teach, or to Bristol to teach, or further afield. It makes sense, I think, to keep it local and then suggest that people go to a different foraging teacher in a different region.
So earning your living from foraging and writing has taken quite a leap of faith, hasn't it? And I've found, living in Cornwall, that there are a lot of women who've done that and have given up things, perhaps, in order to have a new way of life. Do you feel that? And do you feel that this is a place where people can live the life that they really want to?
It does feel a little bit that anything is possible down here, within the remit of it doesn't necessarily mean that you make lots of money. So maybe that's the sacrifice with it. And it's also the circumstances, because of the nature of the work, or maybe the limits of the work available down here. I think it lends itself to people being entrepreneurial. It feels like, yes, it's been a risk to take, but a worthwhile one. And it's also about trusting as well, and just keeping on.
And for you, the idea of doing what you want to do is always a work in progress.
Yes, always a work in progress. Yeah, we change, don't we? And it's easy to just sort of sink into a rhythm and think everything's all right. And sometimes things need shaking up and revisiting. And it's about feeling engaged with life and alive and happy.
Rachel Lambert, thank you very much. I really enjoyed foraging this morning, and I'm going to two things. I'm going to eat more seaweed and think more about what I want to do every day with my life.
Sounds great. Me too.
As Rachel says, anything is possible. If you want to find out more about her courses, seaweed or land food, look up Rachel Lambert Foraging, or check out her lovely little book, Seaweed Foraging in Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly. It's got some really nice recipes in it. In the next episode of Cornwall Woman, we'll meet another dog owner, Jane Pugh. She's an amazing storyteller, a sea swimmer, and an expert at being on her own.
I've always suffered from loneliness as a child. I was, because I'm so social, such a sociable person. And what I learnt is that there was a lack of being able to stop, turn round and face it. It felt, on a kind of metaphorical level, that people were running away from being on their own. There wasn't that moment of saying, stop running and just be on your own. Part of that approach to your own life and how you feel is to stay with that fear until it's not frightening anymore. And further, you can actually appreciate that kind of glorious isolation. My sister, who has a very busy family life with small children, my goodness me, she could do with 40 minutes being on her own. She could really do with that, you know.
Well, it's still windy. I really enjoyed talking to Jane, but there's some very affecting bits in her story which affected me quite personally, I have to say. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Cornwall Woman and rate us. And thank you if you've left a lovely comment. It's good to know you like it.